Welcome to the Essential Knowledge Update podcast from the Royal College of General Practitioners. My name is Dirk Pilat and I'm the clinical lead for the project. Today we will be talking about the new sign guidelines on the management of atopic eczema in primary care with Dr. Thomas Round. Dr. Round is an academic research fellow and a GP in Tower Hamlets. Here in the East End, eczema seems to be one of the most common reasons for children to attend, and I always have the feeling that I could improve my management. Thomas, you had a look at the new guidelines and wrote the EKU module. What was your impression?
Thanks, Dirk. You kindly offered me to do this guideline. It's the sign guideline 125 on atopic eczema or atopic dermatitis, very common from a primary care point of view. And about one in 30 of our GP consultations are for eczema or related problems. So that's common, and probably the cost is estimated around 500 million in terms of NHS direct costs and economic costs. So it's a common problem, can be expensive, and intermittently can sometimes be poorly managed from a primary care point of view. So this sign guideline is on top of the NICE guideline, which was for GPs and for specialists, which was done a couple of years ago now. The sign guidance is just for GPs, so we had a look at both guidelines, really. I guess a couple other key demographics for GPs about sort of background knowledge is that children, there's about a 10% prevalence of eczema in kids, and about 60% of children will have onset within the first year of life. So very common, you'll very commonly see it in your under ones. And it's important to reassure parents that the majority is mild and only 2% have severe eczema. So the vast majority are mild to moderate eczemas. And also there's this idea that eczema does get better, and this is evidence-based. So after 10 years of diagnosis, about 50 to 70% of eczema will resolve. But some adults do have onset. Around 16% of total eczema is adult onset. So some adults do get eczema.
Thank you. Are there any new pointers on diagnosing eczema?
Yes, obviously there's not one clinical test or anything to make the diagnosis. It's based on history and examination. So very much what we as GPs do as our bread and butter. There is some guidance on this. There's the UK Working Party guidelines, which will be in the learning module. Basically, that includes that the parent or the child or the adult, as we mentioned, they have to report an itchy skin condition, and then they have to have three of the following features. So a history of skin crease involvement, a family history of atopy or a personal history of atopy, generally dry skin in the past year, an onset under age of 2 years, and visual flexural dermatitis. So they're kind of criteria that they've come up with the working group. But obviously, if you're a GP, you'll commonly see eczema and dermatitis, so it's kind of bread and butter.
So how would you recognize the severity of the diagnosis? The
severity assessment, and including within that quality of life assessment, isn't covered in the sign guidelines. But I did have a look reading around the subject, as I'm sure you'd like me to do, the NICE guidelines from 2007. They have a stepwise approach to severity. So they have clear skin, mild, moderate, and severe. And they're defining sort of mild as areas of dry skin with infrequent itching. Moderate severe, with included in that is addition of erythema. So for mild eczema, you don't actually have to have very much erythema, just kind of dry skin and itching. And then severe will be widespread areas of dry skin with incessant itching and redness. And I mean, including that as a sort of quality of life assessment, which includes sleep disturbance, which is commonly found. So actual treatment is related to the severity assessment. And obviously, if you go on to first-line treatment for all those, mild, moderate, and severe, would be emollient use. And they really benefit in a number of ways. They soften the skin, and they add a barrier, which reduces the itching. And it's found from research studies they actually increase the efficacy of topical steroids. And actually, if you use a lot of emollient and mega emollient, you need to use less steroids. So actually, from that point of view, it's recommended to use them liberally. I think often we probably don't prescribe enough emollient when we see patients with eczema, and we probably don't recommend enough. So I think there's a kind of education point here and learning point.
So how much would advise parents to use?
It depends on which part of the body is affected. We'll have a table of this in the EKU module. So for example, you have a child moderately severe eczema across the trunk and arms and legs, you'd recommend 400 grams per week of emollient. If arms and legs are affected, then 100 to 200. So if both are affected, you're looking at full tub, of emollient in a week. So
that's a lot of emollient.
Yes, exactly. So I think in terms of how we advise patients and parents in this case, often, as we were talking about young children, to use emollient, I do think a learning point for me, being an eczema sufferer, as well as advising parents, is to use as much emollient. And often it's a combination of emollient and finding one which works. It's also very important to advise use on or before bathing, and I would generally recommend using aqueous cream, as we all, I'm sure, do as a soap substitute.
I saw that in the guideline, they're actually not advising topical steroids on a twice daily base, but initially on a once daily base. That astounded me.
Yeah, so I mean, there's actually evidence for that in the literature. So that has been shown in research evidence that they compared a group with once a day versus twice a day steroids, and there wasn't a significant impact on itch or symptoms. I think that might have been also in the NICE guidelines of a couple of years ago, that we can say that it's evidence-based just to use once-a-day topical steroid when we're treating that.
And of course, that would reduce side effects.
Yes, yeah, reduce side effects, also prescribing costs. So that is evidence-based. So that's a good learning point on the topical steroids front. Obviously, the topical steroids, again, going back to this mild, moderate, severe, you can match your steroid based on how severe the symptoms are and your clinical assessment. Often, I think also it's worth educating parents and children about their eczema, the emollient use, and when to consider a flare. So if you feel maybe a parent is well knowledgeable about eczema, then I think it's fair enough to enable them to have like a rescue pack of steroid at home, which they can initiate themselves if they're experienced in the eczema and they understand how long to use it, etc. Like you would for any chronic condition, really. You know, education is the key and self-management is the key moving into kind of 21st century medicine. I think that's really important. Obviously, people can get confused slightly because we do, a lot of people use the brand names rather than the generic names. And obviously, what can confuse people is that clobetasone comes as two formulations, clobetasone butyrate, which is Humivate, which people know as a moderately strong steroid, and also clobetasone propionate, which is Dermavate, which is the very potent steroid. So I guess people could theoretically make prescribing errors based on that. So I actually do find it simpler to use the brand names for my memory, though I know that's not always advised. But there's a nice table with both the generic and the brand names in our EKU learning module. Mm-hmm. And another point really would be if patients or parents are requiring to use in their children steroids because of recurrent, frequent relapses of their eczema, you could consider, which again was a new learning point for me, prescribing twice a week maintenance therapy in moderate to severe patients with, as I say, frequent relapses. And that's got a good evidence base.
Topical calcineurin inhibitors. Now, there is still a little bit of controversy around them, isn't there?
Yeah, so in terms of the long-term safety, it's still being evaluated. And there's this hint, you know, from observational data of a possible increased malignancy risk, though that isn't definitive. So we can't, in terms of long-term safety, we can't say definitively yes or no. That's why some people create slight anxiety around these medications. Though they do have evidence base in children aged 2 years or older, and that's for 0.03% tacrolimus. And that's for short-term intermittent treatment of moderate to severe eczema, not controlled by topical steroids, or where there's a risk of adverse effects from topical steroid use, as in long-term use has created skin atrophy. There's some evidence that using the tacrolimus will reduce the need for steroids and therefore reduce the atrophy of the skin. The key point really for this medication is not to initiate unless you feel confident in it, and that's in the guidelines as well. So if you don't feel confident, discuss with colleagues who might have an interest in dermatology, your local gypsy if you have one, or if you have any meetings with dermatologists, discuss about when to initiate, when not to initiate, so you get confident in it really.
So we've got emollients, we've got topical corticosteroids, we've got topical calcineurin inhibitors. Anything else that works?
In the SCI guidelines, they have a small section about other treatments. So these include alternative treatments, which basically saying, as we know, caution with these. Advise caution on herbal products, etc. No robust evidence on that. In terms of environmental factors, there's little good quality evidence. And their general advice is, as we probably would do anyways, if you think there's an irritant effect, avoid biological washing powders and fragranced products. But I say that's not from high quality evidence. That's kind of more from observational data. In terms of phototherapy and systemic treatments, that's not covered in SCI guidelines. That's for specialists. They do touch on dressings and wraps, saying they can be effective, though that, I guess, that will be on discussion with your local dermatology team. It's not something we'd commonly prescribe or utilize, dressings or wraps. Antimicrobials are not routinely recommended in the treatment of non-infective eczema. But of course, if you did feel that eczema was infected, then you'd obviously need to treat that as appropriate. And oral antihistamines, there is evidence if a child or an adult has got a sleep disturbance to consider short-term use of sedating antihistamine. So that would be a chlorpheniramine, as we'd commonly prescribe.
Okay. And what has this, has the new guideline changed in your practice personally?
So it's definitely informed my discussions with parents and patients to say it's a common problem, and the majority are mild, and the majority of kids will get better, which, you know, kind of it's reinforcing from an evidence-based point of view, that discussion with parents and with the children. Definitely, I've improved my prescribing of emollients, so I'd consider prescribing two tubs as a minimum of 500 grams each, and probably more going down the ointment route for eczema, and really improving my advice and education to parents. Also about appropriate steroid use for flares, and considering the use of a maintenance steroid of twice a week steroid if your child is or patient with eczema is getting recurrent flares. So that's kind of the real, from my point of view, the take-home key messages for this common condition, which is bread and butter of general practice, and to think about really how you're prescribing and really how you're taking a history and how you're advising parents really to take control of the condition for their child and themselves.
Dr. Thomas Round, thank you very much.
No worries, thank you.
Well, it looks like emollients continue to be the key in the management of eczema. I might just design a big sign for my consultation room that reads emollients, emollients, emollients. That might be the key to the improvement of my patients with eczema. This has been the EKU8 podcast. My name is Dirk Pilat. It was produced with a very noisy Skype connection, the free and open audio production tool Audacity, and the music you heard at the beginning of the podcast was by Matt Bianco. Goodbye.